My message this morning is entitled, Building Arks, Surviving Floods and Rainbow Promises. The Peanuts characters, Linus and Lucy, are standing at a window watching it rain. Lucy says, if it doesn't stop raining, everything's going to get washed away. Oh no, says Linus. Genesis chapter 9 says, never again will God wash everything away. Thank you, said Lucy. That has great comfort for me. And Linus replies, sound theology will do that. Now, some of you didn't laugh. And I'd say that was with good reason. The irony in this cartoon is actually twofold. First, when you're in the middle of a monstrous storm, an old story from some 3,000 years ago isn't all that comforting. But secondly, and possibly more disappointing, just as frequently as not, sound theology, at least on the surface, can seem to be anything but comforting. As a child, I remember the Noah story being one of my favorite stories. I could pass endless hours, honestly, endless hours, drawing pictures of a large boat with an old man with a rain hat hanging over the stern. On a side note, I also admit to being remarkably confused about how Noah actually got all of those animals on the boat when I couldn't even think of all the animals, more or less draw them on my one sheet of paper. If we think about it, we all really love this story. How many children's rooms across the U.S. are decorated with animals and arcs and rainbows painted all over in vibrant pastels? Somehow there is something comforting about it. Somehow there is something beautiful in the promise for the future captured in an acrylic rainbow that has been painted in an exaggerated arch over the baby's crib. I have to say, my perspective has changed considerably since my naive childhood. As I come to these texts again, the reality of the chaos in them comes crashing through with every imagined wave. This is the point at which I must warn you. If you love the Noah story, my message today might be a little bit difficult to listen to. This is not a pretty story. Now, the good news is, in the end, it does have a very valuable lesson in it for all of us. Place this story in modern times. What would the newspaper headline be? Well, one noted reporter penned this headline for the Noah flood event. God destroys world, one family survives. Sounds like the perfect chair rail border for the little toddler's room, doesn't it? God destroys world? No, it doesn't, does it? Looking at the flood event from a more analytical perspective gave me a sort of new insight on how absolutely horrifying this story really is on multiple levels. Let's just start with God. Up until this point, God has given humanity one commandment. Go forth and multiply. Start after the Garden of Eden and read the first five chapters of Genesis and you'll see. There's no thou shalt not kill. There's no thou shalt not covet your neighbor's wife. Not even a don't eat shellfish. So seemingly, even when humanity has basically done what they were told to do, go forth and multiply, the one commandment they had been given, God condemns all of humanity except for one family. If you look at these texts in its entirety, you can even reasonably make the argument, and some people have, that God's actions seem very ungodlike, or at least very unlike God. God doesn't like the way people are acting, even though He had never given them anything by which to measure what God expected of them. So, without warning, God reaches up into the sky, opens the drain that holds back the deluge, and goes home. No warning except to tell his best friend, you might want to build a boat. Now, if that wasn't uncomfortable enough, after it's all said and done, after countless of humans and animals spin and whirl in the chaotic waters of the flood, and their bloated bodies finally come to rest in what must have been some horribly unspeakable places, God seems to regret what has happened, saying, I promise I will never, ever do it again. Look, I made a rainbow for you. The reality of the chaos comes crashing in with every imagined wave. Noah, in my book, is no better off in the story. Noah, the one person on the entire face of the planet who's found to be righteous, has a conversation with God. God says, you should build a boat. I'm going to send some rain. Well, a lot of rain. Okay, a whole lot of rain. Enough to wipe out everything. Except you and your family and a few of every animal. Now, what does Noah do? Well, by the judgment of God, Noah was the one righteous person on the planet. So, maybe presumably, Noah argues to save the innocents, like Abraham argued for with God for the people of Sodom and Gomorrah. Well, no, he doesn't. Noah builds an ark, crams millions of varied species into it, and follows his family onto the ship as God closes the rest of the world out, leaving them to deal with the chaos that was to follow. It is at this point that the chaos comes crashing through with every imagined wave. It must have been absolutely horrifying as the rest of the world came to grips with the reality of what was really going on here. The floodgates had opened. Crazy old Noah. He wasn't looking so crazy anymore. Can you imagine? Can you imagine sitting on the inside of that boat and doing nothing? The horrific screams of your friends and neighbors, the crackling of fingernails bending back on end trying to pry into the one place of refuge in this chaotic world. Can you imagine sitting on the inside of the boat and doing nothing? I can't. The headline would read, God destroys world, one family survives. Now, that, my friends, would make some children's room. Swirls of water painted in deep blues and black, each wave delicately decorated with the slowly swelling body of one of the millions who did not make it, resting heavily on the wall just over the crib as the monstrosity of a boat completely closed in along the edges of the door. You can find the traces of the fingernails that never made it in. And on the other side of the room, as the swells are beginning to subside, carcasses rest in the trees, muck and debris are beginning to find less than convenient resting places, and you begin to think how good it is that you cannot smell this. And in the far corner of the room, a rainbow painted so freshly that the paint still drips, and under it it says, I'm sorry. It will not happen again. The reality of the chaos comes crashing through with every painted wave. God destroys world. One family survives. Noah's actions remind me of so many of the choices that we as a species have made. Whether it's the Holocaust or slavery, the taking of Native American land, Rwanda or Darfur, we continue to make the same horrific choices made by Noah in this flood story. One of the best recent descriptions that I can remember, and it's only relatively recent, of this was the movie Hotel Rwanda. If you've not seen it, honestly, do yourself a favor and go watch it. Hotel Rwanda. Let me sort of set the scene for you. Rwanda is being consumed by the flood of its own tears and the blood of its own people. Diplomats from America and European countries who were in Rwanda and had done what little they could to help begin to see that the tide is not turning and that the deluge of chaos is about to come crashing through with waves of violence. And an astounding piece of cinematic brilliance, the diplomats, those who are thought to be righteous, load themselves into a small bus, a bus eerily shaped like an ark, and in the middle of a rainstorm, the bus pulls out. And pulls out of the oncoming flood without as much as one single Rwandan on it. The reality of the chaos comes crashing through with every wave of violence. Genesis 9, verse 11. God said, never again shall flesh be cut off by a flood. But even now it happens. A flood of hatred cut off the Jews. A flood of greed and entitlement cut off the American Indians. A flood of arrogance and unjustified superiority cut off millions of Africans who were forced into the slave trade, and a flood of tears and blood washed away millions of Rwandans. A flood of bullets ended the lives of 49 in the Atlanta Club. We? All too frequently we find ourselves playing the role of Noah, gathering on our boats of pride and privilege and superiority. And some Christians even imagine that in their righteousness, God has entitled them to it and closes the door behind them for their protection and a sort of divine seal of approval. Now, I said that the good news is that there is a lesson in here for us to learn from this flood story. And there definitely is. Probably a few things that make us a bit uncomfortable, but they are helpful in the long run. In the flood story, we do have a God acting in some ways unlike God. But you see, at this point in the biblical story, God hasn't had much time dealing with this creation thing for very long. And as you might imagine, we humans can be a bit ornery and difficult to manage. If you've ever had children, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Think of it this way. If we are made in the likeness of God, and we have to learn how to handle something new, why could it not be the case that God is trying to figure out how to handle these ornery humans here? I mean, in the end, God does regret that the flood happened, promising that it will never happen again. And what is regret if it's not the result of learning? I regret that I made the choices that I made, but I've learned something from it. I won't do it again. God learned that destruction is not the solution. As a matter of fact, the Hebrew word for the bow that God hangs into the sky is the word used to describe a warrior's bow. God hung destruction in the sky, in the spot where the destructive rains had been, declaring that destruction is not the way, that in the end, love does win. The thing to never lose sight of in all of it is that in all of this, God's anger, disappointment, response, regret, and promise, in all of it, God has one underlying desire. God wants to save the world. We can also learn from Noah, the one righteous person left. Noah never went to God on behalf of those who were going to suffer through the floods. Noah was disengaged from the world. He had built this amazing ark designed by the hands of God, and he kept it all to himself and his family. Floods happen on a daily basis in this world. Some are the Rwandas of the world. Some are floods of economic oppression, floods of fear, floods of social stigma, and even real floods that devastate entire coastlines as they wash out thousands of lives. We call ourselves the people of God. Are we? Do we live our lives that way? Have we learned from stories like this? Do we understand that destruction is not the answer? A life lived as a reflection of God is not about destruction. It's about construction. Building arks in a refuge of the world that is flooded with violence, flooded with all kinds of floods. Have we not learned that we should not shut the world out, but that we should bring the world in? Can we look into the swirling chaos of today's world and honestly make that rainbow promise, you shall not be cut off by the floods, you shall survive? Has the Christian church become an ark of refuge? Or have we huddled into our refuge, assuming that God has closed the door behind us? Building arks, surviving floods, rainbow promises. We are the people of God. In our baptism, God has claimed us by name. Before we were even born, God cherished every fiber of our beings, all of us, everyone in the world. Now, we have to get busy. Did we learn to not shut the world out, but to bring the world in? Did we learn from Noah, from Rwanda? The answer is important. So go and watch the movie Hotel Rwanda. Then read about places like Darfur. Have we learned? Can we look into today's swirling chaos in the world and honestly make that rainbow promise, you will not be cut off by the floods, you will survive? Sometimes we do quite a good job at it, and other times I'd say we have a bit of work to do. But the good news is this, with God's help, following the teachings of Jesus and embracing each other, we can do it. We can. Building arks, surviving floods, rainbow promises.